Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. And you can find all the cool things I do at natelindberg.com. I'm not plugging Twitter anymore because, well, why would I? Hey, we're here to talk NXT, NXT for December, October 3rd. I don't want to rush the year that much, guys. October 3rd, 2023. And holy crap, what an episode of NXT we had tonight. Now, it's not necessarily what we had going on tonight, but the things that were announced for next week, and there were a lot of moving parts tonight. We had a lot of people showing up. Judgment Day, Becky Lynch. Next week, we've got Cody and John Cena coming to NXT. I'm calling it now, Cody. Cody's coming for the Dusty Classic. He's announcing the Dusty Classic, and just throwing that out there right off the bat, right off the bat. A lot to talk about this week, so let's jump into it. Bruce, he's here to talk with me, too. Who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me at B_Lee253. I'm almost all the way over my lingering COVID issues. I still have a bit of a cough, so I still might be using the mute button a bit tonight. Oscar will also be here next week, as will Paul Heyman, as he is in the corner of Braun Breaker, as Braun Breaker faces Carmelo Hayes, who will have John Cena in his corner. And Vic Joseph had to remind us several times tonight that, with the caveat, that this is the youngest WrestleMania weekend main event, and they're doing a rematch, so that'll be next Tuesday. A lot of things going on, and Cody's going to announce the Dusty Classic, and of course he's going to announce that he's going to enter, but with his hand-chosen partner, who, of course, is Dante Chen. Dante Chen is in the tournament with Cody. We know they're going to finish that story, at least. So I'm looking forward to that announcement. But, you know, Roxanne Perez versus Asuka should be a really good match. Hayes versus Breaker with the Heyman will be in the corner, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jimmy and Solo down there as well, somehow interfering to get Cena out the way and further their story with between the Bloodline and John Cena as well. And then you have Cody, and it's just, yeah, Becky's still there, right? You have Dom. We'll get to the whole match, but he recaptured the championship, so Judgment Day is still going to be a part of it, at least with him and Rhea Ripley throughout. So NXT right now, they kept saying developmental, and, you know, the whole shift to 2.0 and kind of coming back. But, wow, they are really booking this show next week like it's basically it's an NXT PLE that they're putting on TV. So it's going to be a hell of a show. And, unfortunately, I have to recap next week. So I guess I'm going to have a lot to write about.
You're going to have some tired fingers by the time show's over. You know, it certainly does feel like the direction has changed for NXT, and it has for a few months now. Maybe a couple of months. We've talked about it quite a bit, and it really feels like it as of next week. I mean, you know, John Cena and I mean, especially John Cena coming to NXT. I mean, he doesn't really have any ties to NXT. He wasn't on the original NXT. The only thing he did for NXT was, I guess, destroy the Nexus. That's about it. And that wasn't even this version of NXT. That was game show NXT. So, I mean, it's just like, it seems like they're trying to, and again, we've said this before, but it seems like they're trying to create a third brand again. There's a lot of storylines that weave in and out now between Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, which is great. And I think that's, I mean, hell, like, it's what better way to get people to watch all the shows is to make sure stuff happens every single show, you know, and kind of boost ratings and things that way. Like, I'm actually going to have to start paying more attention to Raw and SmackDown now, or at least watching them live. Usually I'll DVR them and, like, watch them over the weekend or something like that. I may as well plug it, since Kelly and I will be filling in for Wade after SmackDown this week. You can call in and talk to Kelly and I after the post show on SmackDown. So I'm going to be watching SmackDown live this week, but I personally like this direction for NXT. It's a deviation from what it was supposed to be again, and you know, developmental, and it still is developmental, but I find this more entertaining. I'm enjoying it more. I'm liking the product more and what I'm seeing. you know, NXT 2.0 was great. Well, towards the end,
it had its moments.
It had its moments. But, you know, when you have all these no-name stars and you're trying to build a brand around it, like nobody wants to watch that. But if you build these no-name stars around big stars, people are going to tune in, and then they're going to like, oh, hey, Kalani Jordan, she's got something like that. Oh, yeah, no, I want to keep my eye out on her, you know, and I think overall this is a good thing for everybody. Sure, some people aren't going to be getting as much TV time because, you know, you got to make time for John Cena and Dominic Mysterio and Asuka and Paul Heyman and whatever, but so what? You know, if fewer NXT stars get more eyeballs on them, it's still a win for everybody, I think.
The reason they're doing this, that the speculation, of course, and it's hard not to agree with it, is because AEW is being moved to Tuesday because of the playoff baseball coverage on TBS, TNT, all Turner. So, they're stacking it, but what they've done different this time than in the past when they've tried to go head-to-head with NXT is, sure, yeah, bringing Cena, bringing Cody, bringing Asuka, that's kind of a bit of a hot shot, but they've kind of primed us better because they've had people like Dominic and Rhea, like Becky Lynch, like Baron Corbin, like Dana Brooke on NXT over the past several months, instead of just all of a sudden we just have these people from Raw and SmackDown showing up. So they've done a better job of priming us to be ready for this. Not to say that the surprise isn't a surprise, but it doesn't feel like something that is just being hot-shotted for the sake of trying to pop a rating. And, of course, you can still argue that that is the case for next week. But, again, I think with how they've done in terms of infusing those talent who are mostly on Raw and SmackDown to NXT the past few months, it kind of goes against that argument a little bit, in my opinion, because I think it's definitely a different pattern than how they did it in the past.
Agree, and it doesn't seem like as, I guess it doesn't seem as out of the blue, because it's not as out of the blue, but like, you know, before they'd bring somebody to NXT and you'd be like, wait, what? Like, you know, especially if they, because I assumed AEW was doing something, but I didn't, like, I hadn't actually looked into it yet.
Well, to your point though, real quick, like, The Asuka thing is there to further the story between Roxanne Perez and Kiana James. The Cena thing gets paired with Heyman, so they're still continuing that bloodline story. And
exactly.
Then Cody, if he is dropping in the Dusty Classic, that is an annual tournament that I can't remember if he was the one to introduce it or not, but it's tied to his name, his legacy name. And if he does indeed enter, then that gives you a great story and a great character to put yourself behind immediately going into that. So, yeah, none of it feels like it's just out of the blue, as you were saying. It really feels more like they've had this plan for a bit and they're putting it into action now.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it just kind of seems like everything kind of, like I was saying earlier, everything just kind of seems like it's all tied in to other storylines. It doesn't seem like it's just out of the blue. And, you know, like you said, they've kind of conditioned us at this point to expect main roster stars to show up. It doesn't feel like it's, oh, hey, AEW is doing something. Let's just throw a whole bunch of stuff at the wall and hopefully people will tune in. This is all legitimate, like long-term, it almost feels like long-term booking. Like, what is that in this company? So I don't know. I like this. I like what's going on. I don't know if you would have just told me, you know, like 6 months ago, hey, we're going to have a whole bunch of main roster stars in NXT, taking over titles, and John Cena is going to show up. And I would have been like, oh God, what are they doing? But the way they're actually executing it, I'm all for it. I like what's going on. It's fun. It's entertaining. All right, let's actually continue this conversation here and go to an email from JB. JB says, hi, team. JB from Detroit. It's going to be interesting to see NXT versus AEW on Tuesday night next week when we have Edge's debut match in AEW and Cena's debut match, maybe, I think, on NXT. I don't think it's a debut match, but we'll, I don't know. We'll see. Clearly, both shows are going to win next week in both. Hold on. Clearly, both shows are going all out to win next week's ratings battle. Okay, that makes sense. As always, love the show and go VIP. So, yeah, I mean, Edge's debut match in AEW, I'm kind of upset I can't watch that. I'm not going to lie. Not because I really want to watch AEW, but I'm a huge Edge fan and, like, just kind of would like to watch that. But I have two monitors, so maybe I just will. But, yeah, overall, I think, like, Cena era Edge on AEW feels almost like bigger news than Cena on NXT. But if you're a WWE fan and, you know, you like WWE a little bit more and you're not really Edge or Cena or anything, maybe you'll tune in NXT over WWE or over AEW because you want to see what's going to happen with Cena showing up, you know, especially in Carmelo Hayes' corner on NXT. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a hell of a show next week, one way or another. Anything else to say on this email?
Yeah. So one thing that we don't have on NXT next week announced yet are any title matches. And AEW is building next Tuesday as Title Tuesday, and there's going to be some title matches. So, and you know, while I do think there are more similarities between AEW and WWE than people like to admit, there are differences in terms of how the in-ring product is presented at times. And so, you know, there are people who are going to prefer, you have your tribals, of course, but then you also have people who may just prefer wanting to see what's been going on in AEW more than they want to do in NXT. Maybe the influx of people from Raw and SmackDown is turning off some people, even though the viewership numbers have been going up, because maybe they just want to focus on the NXT talent. They're more interested in what's going to happen on Title Tuesday. Now, the other thing that I'm just going to put here, because it's something that I've always thought, and I know that I'm in a minority, but it's not like it's a 90-10, it's more like a 60-40 minority, but I've always thought that Christian is the better pro wrestler in every facet of the game than Edge, and mm-hmm. I still believe that, and I think Christian's work in AEW has really just reinforced my belief that he has always been the better of the two, but that is my personal opinion.
I'm a massive Edge fan, and as far as I'm concerned, Christian's the better technical wrestler, hands down.
Oh, I think Christian's better in all aspects, but not just technical wrestling. So,
I think he's certainly underrated, absolutely underrated. I cannot disagree with you having that opinion. Let's put it that way.
I understand people who think Edge is better than one of the best because that's how he was booked. But I still think, holistically, that Christian was probably better.
No, I mean, like, I've seen some of the stuff he's done in AEW. I haven't been watching AEW, but, like, I've specifically gone and watched, like, some of the stuff, like, you know, that he's been doing, this, you know, whole father gimmick thing. And, I mean, it's great. Like, matter of fact, I don't know if you guys, specifically, I say guys, like, Kelly's here. Happy birthday, Kelly. He's not here tonight. It's his birthday. I don't know if you watch the Edge and Christian show, the Totally Reeks of Awesomeness on WWE Network, but, like, I mean, you can really see the range of acting from both of them on that show. As dumb and stupid as it is, and I love it. I love every single minute of both of those seasons. Guys, give me another one. In AEW, if you can.
Hey, maybe the other one to Max. They're probably going to Max. Maybe they will do that. Tony Khan has FU money, so.
It would be I would. It'd be amazing. Matter of fact, total tangent right here, but they also did their podcast, the Total Reeks of Awesomeness or whatever. And back in 2019, I got in a pretty bad rollover car accident. And I'm listening to that podcast on my way to work. And my car's upside down, like on fire. I'm hanging upside down from my seat with the seat belt and, you know, but my radio's still working. And I have no idea what just happened. I'm really confused, and all I can hear is Jay say that he's going to slap Adam's ass. And just that one moment is always going to just stick in my head. It made me laugh while I was, like, freaking the hell out. But anyway, so Christian, totally underrated. I I'm really curious to see what the two of them are going to be able to do without together without the constraints of Vince McMahon in AEW. Like, it actually may get me to tune in to at least to their segments, because, like, I mean, it's no secret that Vince couldn't stand Christian, you know, like, didn't like the sight of him, and never really, I wouldn't say couldn't stand him, but never saw him as a top tier talent. And that certainly held him back over the years. So sure, he won world titles, but did he really? Certainly not to the same level as Edge. So I'm really curious to see what they're going to do with all of the reigns kind of off in AEW. Even though everybody's like in their 50s, maybe, I actually don't know. I'd have to look at how everybody's close to their 50s. I still would like to see them maybe do something with the Hardys too, because it's just a nostalgia factor. But just don't be giving me TLC matches, guys. Just do something a little more tame.
I don't know who it was, but I saw a tweet saying Bully Ray is doing everything he can to get him and Devon in to have a TLC match with ENC and the Hardys now. And oh goodness, I don't know if we want to see that 20 years later. But
you know what? And if Devon can't actually, I'm sure Devon's even said he's got like one or two left in him. I just don't know if he's got one or two TLCs left in him. But you know, I feel like Bully Ray could grab Hook. And you can still tell that story because there's still an ECW tie there, you know? Why are we talking about AEW on an NXT show? I don't know.
Because we got asked about Edge and the ratings next week. And
Yeah. But anyway, I did not think I'd be talking about Hook on this show tonight. But here we are. So, yeah, anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing Cena on the show, seeing what he's going to do, if he's actually going to wrestle, if he's just going to show up. I think it'd be fun to actually see him wrestle in an NXT ring. Like, it's something he's never done. And I could actually see him saying, no, I want to wrestle, like, because it's something I've never done. Just another feather in my cap, give the people something cool. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's just supposed to be in Carmelo's corner. A couple of Boston boys. All right, I'm going to just keep going with emails here. We'll talk about the main event soon. If you want to send us an email, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, just like JB and Kevin did, as I was about to read Kevin's email. Or if you'd like to call in and be a part of the show, we have a few people listening, nobody in the caller queue to actually talk with our lovely selves tonight. But you can call in at 515-605-9345 and press 1 to let me know that you want to actually talk. You can just listen if you want, but if you press 1, it puts a little hand next to your name and says, hey, Nate, I want to be part of the show. It doesn't actually say that, but, you know, you get my point. There was something. And if you do call in, we go live approximately 30 minutes after NXT goes off the air. I wanted to get that in because sometimes I don't think we actually say that, and I don't know if people actually know when to call. Anyway, let's get back to this email from Kevin. Kevin says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. First and foremost, happy birthday to our very own jar of mayonnaise, Mr. Kelly Wells. We got to get back to calling each other jars of mayonnaise, gentlemen. Secondly,
I'm only half white.
Yeah, I guess it made more sense when it was me, Tom, and Kelly. Yeah, mm-hmm. All right. Secondly, reflecting on the overall flow of the show, what are you looking forward to most for next week in light of developments from tonight's episode? That's all for tonight. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. What am I looking for? Man, I don't know if it's the thing I'm looking forward to the most, but it's something I'm really looking forward to. Is the pop Asuka gets when she returns to NXT. I'm hoping that crowd treats her well and she gets a great pop and she's just able to have a great match and hell of a time in NXT. What about you?
Probably for the show to be over, so I don't have to recap it anymore. On a serious note, I think what I'm looking forward to most in terms of what's announced next week is Cody announcing his partnership with Dante Chen. Okay, on an actual serious note, it's probably Asuka coming back because she was so integral to Black and Gold, her undefeated streak, her reign, her relinquishing the title, her matches with people that you never thought would have matches like that, like Billy Kay, Peyton Royce. The one with the Last Woman Standing with Nikki Cross was just fantastic. And
yeah,
she was the person that was really the anchor after the Four Horsewomen era. And you couldn't have asked for anyone better to be that person. Her matches with Nia Jax, like Asuka importance to WWE as a whole can't be understated, but her importance to NXT, especially at a time when losing the Four Horsewomen could have been a real, real blow to the women's division, to NXT as a whole. She was the one who made it feel like they didn't really miss a single step and kept that streak going of NXT having the best women's division pretty much up until that shift to 2.0. And so, yeah, I think I just, like you said, hopefully great response, great reaction, and it's going to be basically a face-versus-face matchup, except, and we'll get to it, but that live crowd was not liking Roxanne Perez, and I think this is just one of those things with Wesley again, where they were just being, when he was a tag team, where they're just being a bit weird, because I don't understand it. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
I don't know. With Roxy, I feel like it's... She hasn't done a whole hell of a lot of note lately, but they're still giving us that same story, like, she's the chosen one. So I don't know. Like, I'm having trouble getting... I mean, I guess I've always had a little trouble getting behind Roxanne Perez as, you know, like a credible contender in NXT for the title and whatever. But I think that's part of it right now. For
well,
me.
Look,
it's just like,
if it's the booking, right? And if I have to compare her booking to someone else, and again, it could be because of the age. And this is the reason I gave for this person too. But they're booking her a lot like Tyler Bate. We're gonna put you on TV when we need to advance some stories. You're probably gonna lose at this point, but that's
yep.
fine because we have a bright future for you. And part of the issue, and part of the reason why I don't really get behind Tyler Bate lately, because I know he's not going to be winning anything because of how they've been booking him throughout the last basically year on NXT. And so really ever since he lost that Worlds Collide match to unify the titles, that's what they're doing with Roxy. She's basically coming in only when they need to advance storylines for people or have her put over somebody, because she's done it. She's been at the top so much already and she's so young, but they don't want to move her yet because she's still kind of the glue of the women's division right now. So, yeah, it's a bit odd how they're booking her, and I think that is definitely hindering and what's causing some of that response with the crowd.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Definitely makes sense. all right, so, yeah, let's actually talk about our main event here tonight. Main event, Dominic Mysterio versus Trick Williams for the NXT North American title. We had Judgment Day, like the entirety of Judgment Day, in Dominic's corner after we saw Finn Balor and Damian Priest make their way out during the match. Let's see, we also saw JD McDonagh make his way out here. Why do I feel like I'm missing somebody else?
Am I missing somebody else?
I think it was it.
That's
okay.
All five.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. I feel like there was just a lot going on in this match. I thought.
Yeah,
I was
there were
somebody.
Two titles and a Money in the Bank briefcase involved too. So.
Yeah, three titles because we had I mean, I guess because you had the tag team titles, and then you.
Well,
had...
I meant three titles I got into the match. Two titles and a Money in the Bank briefcase match.
Right.
Money in the Bank briefcase that were involved in the match.
Right. Yeah. Because we saw. Dominic pick up the win after giving, I believe it was a DDT to...
That was earlier in the match.
Yeah. That's right.
And then Finn hit Trick in the back of the head with one of his tag titles.
Right. Right for the win there. I'm a little shocked that this happened, but I'm also not shocked that this happened because... What would Dom have done if he went back to Raw on Monday and did not have the North American title after Rhea got in his face last night on Raw and was like, you need to come home with the title or don't come home or whatever it was she said, essentially something along those lines.
If you don't win the title, don't bother coming home.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, I heard that. Like, I didn't actually watch Raw. Like I said, I usually DVR Raw and watch in SmackDown. Watch them both over the weekend. So, but I did see like that clip earlier today, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, what's going to happen tonight? Like, how are we going to get out of this? Well, that makes sense, I guess. He's going to come back with the title. What I'm curious is what this now means for Trick Williams. It was cool. Like, he had this, like, week-long – not even a week-long.
2 days.
2 days. Wow, man, that feels like a lot longer than 2 days.
Three days, almost. He was on Saturday, yeah.
Okay, I knew it was a lot longer than 2 days. That's a whole 30
3 days.
More. It just didn't feel like, you know, it didn't feel like it was his time to necessarily lose it. I'm wondering if this is going to wind up propelling the feud between Trick and Mello, and potentially put them into a triple threat situation with Ilya. I was kind of talking about on the VIP after show with Kelly the other day that maybe we would wind up seeing Trick and Carmelo's feud be over the North American title, but clearly that's not going to be the case, and maybe we wind up seeing the two of them wind up in a feud with Ilya. They've kind of been in a three-way feud for months now anyway. Trick's just kind of been a background player. And now we see them all challenge for the NXT title, and maybe Mello goes up after that. I don't know. I'm not sure, but that kind of seems like the direction they're probably headed in right now. What about you, Bruce? What do you think?
Well, so the thing with Trick and him losing the title, yeah, basically once Ripley made the ultimatum to Dominic Mee was going to happen. Then you have all the particulars. It was a pretty good match. I mean, not the smoothest at times, but with these two. But, you know, Williams puts a little bit of stank on some of his moves. You know, it's not the most crisp body slam, but he did put a little bit of something on it. So you had the DDT on the women's title from Ripley. He kicked out. And then as Priest slid in the briefcase and Dom went to use it, the ref saw that and went to go take that out. So the ref got distracted at the end, which allowed Balor to hit the title on Williams and knocked him flat on his face. Williams didn't move, and that made Dominic hit the frog splash across the back of Williams instead of the front. That's how the match ended. And then to your point about what this means for him and Hayes, if you go back to that segment with Ilya and then Trick coming out and then Mello coming out, I said in our group chat, like, everything Carmelo is saying is justified, but his delivery is what is problematic, basically. And so here, he was upset with Trick because Trick was thanking Ilya for making him the best, and he's like, I've been the one supporting you from day one. I've been the one who always knew you could do this. You know, there's no doubt, there's no denying that you're championship material, right? So while that is accurate, it almost seemed like being petty because you're not getting the credit you think you deserve from the homie, right? And then after that, he said, you're looking at him, but you need to be worried about Dom. And then that's when Dom's music hit, right? And so Hayes is out there still trying to support, but also with that experience of being a champion, because he also said during that promo, it's one thing to win, it's another thing to retain. And Williams took a bit of offense to that, right? Because he's like, well, you said I'm not capable. And then he's like, that's when he switched to saying, you need to focus on Dom. And by him saying focus on Dom, he also meant you need to focus on Judgment Day, right? And as you were saying, I think this is what's going to lead to some kind of the eventual match between the feud, the angle, because while Hayes has, I used to tell my students, intentions don't matter. It's what happens and how people receive it, right? The best of intentions, how he's going about it and how Trick is receiving it is not, you know, positive. And all the things that he's saying, again, while accurate, could be things that Trick takes as a denigration and then uses that to go against or to spark that feud, right? So to me, what they've been doing between these two, it's all been in how they've been speaking to each other basically the past month or so, right? Ever since Great American Bash, essentially. How they've been talking to each other, the words they've been using, delivery is kind of, to me, how the story's being told. And we're probably not going to see them actually have any sort of physical occasion or any sort of physical meeting up until they actually have their match, because the story right now is being told through their words. And so I'm really appreciating the nuances and the details they're putting into how they're getting to the eventual match between these two.
All right, let's see. What other match do we have to talk about? Let's just work backwards here. Let's talk about JC Jane and Thea Hale versus Electra Lopez and Lola Vice. So we saw right before this, I think it was segment or two before this match, we saw Chase University walk up to Thea Hale and JC Jane backstage, offer their services, and ask if they, you know, would like if Thea would like them to accompany the ring. Thea's like, nah, I don't think so. I think we're good. And JC's like, no, actually, no, yeah, I think it's a good idea. And, you know, kind of strength in numbers, type of deal. Kind of seems a little shady if you ask me, coming from JC, but whatever. And of course, as soon as JC was like, yeah, that's a great idea, Thea was like, oh yeah, all right, no, of course, it's a great idea. Come on, let's go to the ring. They had a match against, like I said, Electra Lopez, Lola Vice. This all kind of started some Twitter beef or Instagram beef, some sort of beef that happened on social media that wasn't a hamburger. That was a terrible joke. I'm sorry. The match itself, like, was fine. I'm liking what we're seeing out of Lola Vice and Electra Lopez, especially the two of them, like, kind of undercard. Electra Lopez, she really needed a lot of work when she was with Legado del Fantasma, and I feel like she's starting to get it a little bit more. I feel like she's getting it a little bit more every time she goes out. Lola Vice, same deal. You know, she's also in the breakout tournament, which we haven't talked about quite yet, but she was named in the breakout tournament. Really interested to see how she's going to do the breakout tournament. Like what she did here in this match tonight, too. Obviously, this match more about JC Jane, the Thea Hale in particular. Bruce, what'd you think of the match?
Yeah, so it was because Thea Hale tweeted out a picture of her in her black getup and saying, all caps, grown-ass woman, and Lopez and Vice were like, you think one shopping shirt makes you a grown-ass woman? All right, whatever. So that led to this match. And, yeah, going back to what I said when we saw them first team together, sometimes it just takes someone who it gives you that confidence to be who you think you can be, or just confidence to that you can do these things, that really brings it out of you. And since their pairing, I've seen none of the hesitancy, none of the light, none of the sort of sloppiness that we used to see in Electra Lopez's matches. I think her pairing with Lola Vice has been that confidence booster going back to their beginning. And I said, every time they're out there now, you see more improvement from Electra Lopez, which you weren't seeing when she was just a singles wrestler. And so maybe, and I said this too, maybe she's just someone who was meant to be a tag team wrestler. And that's not a knock on anybody. You have to have the tag team wrestling. So they looked good, of course, here. This whole Hale Jane thing, it felt really weird to me that JC Jane got the hot tag and the crowd was just dead too, because I don't think just saying JC Jane hot tag sounds incredibly, incredibly weird, because she's always been a heel. And so for that to happen in this match, I guess it's supposed to be a subtle double turn. I don't know, but it just felt, to me, the more interesting team, well, yeah, I guess so. It just felt awkward. But to me, the more interesting team was Lopez and Vice. And then when it comes to the breakout tournament, I'll wait till we kind of go over all that, because there is a match that actually happened tonight that was part of the breakout tournament. But, yeah, to me, Lopez and Vice are the ones that stood out tonight in this tag team match. You look at Lola Vice, and
she's someone who's not afraid to use her MMA background. And also, sometimes you get people who are too MMA-based when they get to pro wrestling. And sometimes that works if you go into like a blood sport, right? But here in WWE, even in AEW, you need to be able to mix in more pro wrestling. I think early on, it's inarguable that Vice has done a fantastic job of mixing in MMA when it's necessary and still maintaining that sense of pro wrestling. So a lot of the MMA she's been introducing are those strikes and her kicks, and they're great. The one thing about this match I did hate, though, bringing in the MMA stuff, you cannot convince me that Dia Hale is going to sit there and from the bottom, from full guard, and not from a more mounted position, even side control, is going to make Electra Lopez tap to the Kimura lock. Okay, so the Kimura has been long considered, you know, in submissions, in grappling. So you have your leverage ones, your joint locks, like your arm bars, your knee bars, etc. Then you have your chokes, where it's all, you know, strength comes into play there too. But the Kimura lock has always been considered to be a hold that you only do if you're extremely strong. And so unless Thea Hale somehow has the strength of like 20 women, I can't buy her being able to make Electra Lopez tap from the bottom. So I know we need to put some kayfabe in there, but it also has to at least border reality. And I don't think that was bordering reality to me as someone who has watched a lot of MMA and seen what it takes to make people tap or snap with the Kimura lock. So, yeah.
We were talking about the breakout tournament, so let's just keep talking about the breakout tournament. We did have a match, first match in the breakout tournament, Kalani Jordan versus Izzy Dame. Kalani Jordan went over here. Izzy Dame did not look very happy that she was kind of eliminated from the tournament after she lost, kind of with a bit of a scowl on her face walking up the ramp. I thought this was actually a pretty good match. Like I said earlier tonight, Kalani Jordan, somebody that I've got my eye on, have for a little while. You know, when she was paired up with Dana Brooke, it almost seemed like a shame that she was paired up with Dana Brooke. You know, she kind of felt like she could probably, I guess, do better than that. There was really only the gymnastics backgrounds kind of was, you know, that pairing was based on just the gymnastic stuff. We can feel free to talk about the match. We also have we had the entire bracket laid out for us tonight. I don't have the bracket, but I do have everybody who's in the match. That is Jakara Jackson, Carmen Petrovic, Lola Vice, Jada Parker, Izzy Dame, Danny Parker, Kalani Jordan, and Ariana Grace. Her second year in the tournament, I think she's the only one. I can't remember anybody else. I think it was just...
Yeah, it's because she tore her ACL either during or right after the tournament last year.
Yeah, it was something... I knew it was an injury. I just didn't know what it was off the top of my head. So... Looking forward to the breakout tournament. We saw some, you know, I mean, Tiffany Stratton, Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade, you know, kind of all broke out from that tournament last year. So going to be interesting to see what happens in this tournament and who's going to kind of, I guess, break out from it. And no pun intended. I just couldn't think of a better way to say it. Bruce, on this match and the breakout tournament as a whole.
Yeah, so... Earlier in the night, they showed short little like 5-10 second videos of each competitor in the breakout tournament in succession. So they each kind of said their name and what to like why you should watch out for them, what they're going to do in this tournament. The bracket is, you know, Jordan versus Dame, obviously. And then on the same side, Ariana Grace versus Jakara Jackson. On the opposite side, you have Carmen Petrovic versus Jada Parker and then Danny Palmer versus Lola Vice. So to the first match, Jordan and Dame. Now, I wondered if they might have Jordan lose here and go on a sort of finding herself storyline after losing her mentor kind of thing, right? So it wouldn't have surprised me. Surprised me with Izzy Dame. I thought she looked fantastic here tonight. No hesitancy, just going full force. Well, I don't want to say full force as in like she was being reckless or she had no pacing, but she was confident in her movements, in her delivery of offense, in her selling. So I was really impressed by Dame. I was thoroughly impressed by the fact that she busted out an old-school Canadian backbreaker submission and kind of held it there for a while. Jordan, I kind of know what to expect, so to me, I was more paying attention to Dame. And yeah, Jordan still did her stuff, but she needs to add more to what she's doing. To me, Dame dominated the match, and then Jordan at the end was able to get it. The good thing I will say about Jordan, though, is she didn't milk anything. So as soon as she hit the top rope, she went for the crossbody. As soon as she sprung in and got the kick and hit the kick on Izzy Dame, she immediately went to the split-legged moonsault. There was no, I'm milking this. There was no, I'm taking my time. It was just do, right, so that there was no sort of like, oh, they're just kind of waiting around to get to take the move. And I did appreciate that. So looking at the bracket, my heart says Jakara Jackson. Big Jakara Jackson fan, I think that there's a lot that she can bring to the table when she's given the opportunity. Just, I mean, she stands out when she doesn't even speak with Metaphor and they're out there on their little platform. So, but my brain says the final will be Kalani Jordan versus Lola Vice. And depending on what they want to do, I think that'll determine who wins that match. But to me, the only match with people we haven't that has someone we haven't seen on NXT before is Petrovic versus Parker. As far as I'm aware, they may have been on Level Up, but no. So this breakout tournament, you have names that you know, and you have a couple that you don't know. But the names you do know, aside from really Kalani Jordan and Lola Vice, the other ones haven't really had much match time on NXT. So it's a real good chance for all of them to show, just like Izzy Dame tonight in, 5 minutes, that show what they have and what they can bring to NXT. So I'm really looking forward to this tournament. And I always look forward to the breakout tournaments that they have in NXT. So another one that I think they've laid out well. And we'll see if the Jordan Vice is the actual final here in a couple weeks.
I think it's either going to be that Jordan Vice or it's going to be Jackson Vice. And I am leaning more Lola Vice, not Jackson Vice. Either Lola Vice and Kalani Jordan or Jakara Jackson and Jordan.
Jakara Jackson or Kalani Jordan on the same side of the bracket, so they can't be in the finals together.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not looking at the bracket. So, yeah,
so
fair enough.
I think they could do Jackson and Vice because while it would be heel ostensibly, the crowd cheers for Vice to get a face reaction just for that match. But I do think the most likely is still Jordan versus Vice.
Yeah, and the way that the reason that I was also leaning, kind of Jakara Jackson being out of it, it being Jackson Vice Jordan Vice. It's getting confusing, Jordan Jackson. I feel like I'm talking about basketball. Jakara Jackson, she's obviously got a push right now. She's got Metaphor. She there's a platform for her there to kind of break out. Ostensibly there, she doesn't necessarily need the tournament, although what couldn't hurt, but somebody like Kalani Jordan or Lola Vice, I feel like they could really use something like this tournament to actually propel their career. So I feel like that's kind of the way it's leaning for me as well. All right, let's keep going here. Let's talk about, we saw Blair Davenport versus Gigi Dolin. This is a match that's supposed to happen, I believe it was last week, if I'm not mistaken, did not happen. Blair Davenport ended up attacking Gigi Dolin, and the whole match didn't wind up taking place. We saw that take place tonight. Blair Davenport making her way to the ring. Gigi Dolin attacks her from the crowd, if I'm not mistaken. During her entrance and kind of kicks the match off proper there. I think it was Blair Davenport went to introduce a chair into the match at one point. Gigi kind of wrestled the chair away from her. Blair gets it back, winds up going to use the chair in the match, and the ref kind of tries to steal it away because, that's what the ref's supposed to do, keep law and order here in a match. I guess when they feel like it, and it helps the story, especially. He tries to take the chair away, and while he's wrestling with with Davenport for the chair. Gigi Dolan's able to roll her up for the win. It was a good match. Probably one of the better matches I've seen Gigi Dolan in, probably because she's opposite Blair Davenport. I'm as much as I want to be invested in this, because I want to be invested in whatever Blair Davenport's doing, I'm not very invested in Gigi Dolan. I hate to say, I was more invested with when she was still part of Toxic Attraction and Mandy Rose was still around, and that's, wow, not something I ever thought I'd say. But I was, you know, now kind of on her own, she just, I don't know, she feels, she's floundering a little bit. And she's got, even though they're trying to put some stank on her character here, it's still, I don't want to say generic, because it's not generic, but I feel like it's just been done before, and it's not unique enough. I can't quite put my finger on it, on what exactly I'm trying to say, but it just feels like it's not unique enough. Like, I mean, even now with Becky Lynch down here, right? Becky, signature orange hair. Well, now Gigi almost feels like, and it always kind of has with that bright orange hair, that she's just kind of like a Becky Lynch wannabe in that respect. So I feel like that might also be kind of holding her back a little bit too. But all of that said, I think this is a pretty passable match. Gigi Dolan gets the win. And doesn't look like this feud is quite over yet. So Bruce, on Davenport and Dolan.
Yeah, I'll probably get some kind of weapons match or something at one of the two nights of Halloween Havoc, considering I don't think they're going to put this on such a stat card next week already. Don't be surprised if next week there's only like 3 or 4 matches because of the people involved and the time they might be given.
Yeah.
So regarding Davenport, Dolan, the match, yeah, it's fine. Davenport, I think, is probably why she was able to bring out more from Dolan. It helps that this feud has been built off of really them just really hating each other and trying to get at each other. So while we normally don't advocate for faces to attack before the match, considering how many times Gigi Dolan has been attacked by Blair Davenport prior to her matches, and kind of using the smoke to her advantage for Davenport's entrance as well, you know, good for her. They did give her at least one win here. It wasn't definitive. She didn't get the roll-up. But, yeah, I just feel like it's a bit bland. I mean, if you look at the baby faces right now in the women's division, you know, you have Becky Lynch, of course. Even someone like Kalani Jordan is so much more of like a white meat baby face. I think it's easier to get behind. And, excuse me, I think her skill set lends more to a babyface pop than maybe a Gigi Dolan. I think there was a reason she was a heel for so long, and it's partly her ring style, I think, is more geared toward that than being a babyface. And to me, while putting her against Blair Davenport is, you know, smart booking in the sense that Blair Davenport's a definitive heel, I'm just not sure if they've done enough character. They've tried, but I don't know if they've been able to channel what they've done outside of the ring into the ring with her. And I think that disconnect is one reason why she's not getting over as much for people like you and me.
No, I think that definitely makes sense. It definitely makes sense. Let's see. We also have, let's go back here. To determine Becky Lynch's next challenger, we had, because Becky kicked off the show tonight, came out and, you know, basically talked about being the champion, as you do. And, you know, one of my favorite tropes in pro wrestling is when the champion's in the ring, especially to kick off the show, talking about how great they are, you're going to have at least 3 people come out that want a shot at the title. Sometimes 4, and sometimes, especially if it's around Money in the Bank, it might be 5.
Sometimes 6 if you're doing a six-pack challenge.
Yep, or 6. But, you know, here tonight we saw 3. Usually let's say a group of people come out and say, we want the title. And, of course, it's like, well, what's the best way to make this figure out who's going to be? Let's put everybody together in a match. And that's what they did here tonight. Triple threat match. Indiana. Wow. Indy Hartwell, Roxanne Perez, Lyra Valkyria in a triple threat match for the number one contender for Becky's title. Indy returning after injury. She hadn't been seen since she had relinquished her title due to injury. I think it was an ACL injury, a knee injury, something like that. I know she was on crutches, guys. But she had relinquished the title just a couple weeks after she won the NXT title, very unexpectedly, in that ladder match, back in, I think it was April or May.
I think it was Stand and Deliver, WrestleMania weekend.
Okay, yeah, that's right. It was Stand and Deliver. It was Stand and Deliver because the next one was Battleground, and I went to Battleground. I'm staring at the card on my wall right now going, wait a minute, how did we get to Stratton? All right, so yeah, that's what it was. Let's see. What was I just talking about? Oh, yeah, the triple threat. We did see Lyra Valkyria pick up the win here, which was kind of foreshadowed by a segment earlier that showed her or actually it was the opening segment when Lyra Valkyria came out and kind of talking about how, you know, Becky is the reason she's a wrestler and all of that. It just kind of felt like that was probably the story that they were telling. It kind of has for a couple weeks now. They've dropped some hints that Lyra might be the next challenger for Becky. I thought it was cool to see, you know, Indy come back here and challenge for or kind of like throw her name back into a title that she never lost. Yeah, she should technically get a rematch because that's how things work. But, you know, we're still waiting for the Kofi rematch. I want Kofi to challenge somebody for a title. He never got his rematch after Brock Lesnar annihilated him in 20 seconds or whatever it was.
It was like 7 seconds.
Yeah, I just don't want to admit it might have been single digits. anything on the triple threat?
Yeah, so as you said, it was set up earlier in the night. And that's where Roxanne Perez really got those boos I was talking about. What was interesting was that Hartwell didn't really get much of a response at all when her music hit and when she came out, at least from what I was hearing. Maybe my audio was just off, but didn't get much. Lyra Valkyria, maybe because she was the first person to come out after Becky, actually had a pretty big pop. And, you know, as you were saying, if you go back a couple of weeks, they've had their face-to-faces a couple of times. They had the tag match, I believe, together as well. So her being the victor here doesn't surprise anybody. Now, the fact that Kiana James got involved, again, another way to set up or to continue that angle between her and Roxanne Perez. Roxanne Perez, I think, defeated her to eliminate her from number one contendership status or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think those two had a match not too long ago. I recently had COVID, everybody, so my brain is still not functioning all the way. I know something happened between them, but and then I think that's what also led to the interview later and Kiana James saying that Perez can fight me if she gets past her opponent next week, who is the Empress of Shimaru, Asuka. And, you know, we all popped for that, of course. I noticed Kelly didn't have the time in his report on the VIP side, at least, in his notes, though, that he said to us, this was the longest match of the night. It went 11:51, which was almost a minute and 50 longer than the opener, the main event. Was actually it's about a minute and a half longer than the main event. So they put a lot. This was the overlapping main event or the overlapping match, I believe, the segment between the first hour and the second hour. So one reason why they got a lot of time. Lynch also got involved by super kicking Kiana James right in the face, which allowed Valkyria to hit her top rope splash. I will say though, I think Valkyria might be scared of heights because every time she hits that splash, she looks very tentative and kind of scared. And it just it seems to take away from the impact for me. But, you know, it helped that Perez already took the pop rocks. Or not Perez. Hartwell had already taken the pop rocks from Perez and kind of laid her out. So we get on, I think they said, night one of Halloween Havoc. Presumably the main event will be Becky Lynch defending against Lyra Valkyria. I don't think Valkyria is going to win, but I didn't think that Hayes would lose on Saturday as well to Dragunov. So this could be the time that they pull the title off Becky and put it onto somebody else and go from there. I don't have confidence in Valkyria being kind of the one to carry it forward right now. I'm not sure if her promos are quite there yet.
Well, I mean, it could certainly be Tegan Knox if she beats Becky on Monday. I almost couldn't say that with a straight face.
Oh, my gosh. Is there anything more to her besides I have two bum knees and I like Captain Marvel? Have they done anything more? Or
not really, no. Yeah, it's like whatever. I'm glad they're doing something with her, but I don't think anybody really thinks she's going to win. And it's such a, especially now where they're moving forward with Lyra Valkyria and its story, like it just wouldn't make sense to put Nox versus Valkyria together after having this particular kind of personal story with Valkyria and Becky. So Nox ain't going to win.
And beyond that, why would you change the title here when you have the Iron Survivor Challenge coming up in December? Why not just have Becky hold that title until probably Stand and Deliver if necessary and use the Iron Survivor Challenge to put up the next challenge? Because right now, after Valkyria, there's really nobody unless the breakout tournament winner gets a title shot like Perez did, only don't use it on a tag team title shot because they don't have it anymore. But yeah, so it doesn't make sense at this point to have her draw the title. And it just seems like hyping the Iron Survivor Challenge so much that she needs to be the champion for that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I wasn't even thinking of the Iron Survivor Challenge. So that sounds like it probably makes the most sense. All right, let's see. And let's go ahead and talk about the first match of the night. So British Strong Style reunite, Tyler Bate and Butch. I still want to call him Pete Dunne. Butch versus Gallus, getting a little bit of retribution coming from No Mercy after Gallus stuck their nose into Butch's match, kind of costing him the NXT Heritage Cup. So wound up in a tag team match here tonight. Joe Coffey wound up interfering towards the end of the match, causing disqualification. And Ridge Holland wound up making the save on behalf of British Strong Style. So we kind of have like a brawling brute British Strong Style mashup here, but that's cool. And more than likely we'll wind up seeing, I'm sure we'll wind up seeing a six-man tag between these two groups before long. Yeah, I don't have a whole heck of a lot to say about the match itself. It was exactly what you kind of expect out of these two teams. It was a really great opening tag team match. Kind of looking forward to seeing what Ridge Holland's going to bring into the mix here. I'm not a huge fan of like multi-person tag matches like this, like six-man tags and things, because it gets very frenetic sometimes and almost tornado taggy because people forget the rules and whatnot. But Gallus, British Strong Style, Ridge Holland, like, I don't know. It's going to be a car wreck, but it's going to be a good car wreck. Bruce, your thoughts on all this in a cup of tea?
So, you know, I hate to correct you, Nate, but the match actually ended when they hit a kind of double slam on, I think it might have been Wolfgang. No, it was Mark Coffey. And they pinned him, and then right after the pin is when Joe Coffey came in and attacked him. So there was no DQ. There was
I thought he broke up the pin.
The bell rung, and then right after bell rung, he attacked
and
whatnot. And that's what led to Ridge coming in. I thought it was just laughably stupid that Vic Joseph said there was no reason for Gallus to stick their nose into the match on Saturday. He's like, did you not see the final of group Butch and Joe Coffey were in the same bracket,
right?
Or not the same bracket. They fought off at the finals of the Global Heritage Invitational, and Coffey lost. Why wouldn't he try and get back at Dunn when he thinks he's the one that should have been taken on Noam Dar for the Heritage Cup, right? So I thought that was a real dumb line by Vic Joseph. On an otherwise pretty solid night for him, especially when the announcement for Cena happened, I thought he showed the appropriate amount of exuberance because it's the first time thing ever in WWE for Cena to be on NXT TV. So that aside, I mean, that line from him about Gallus not having a reason to stick their head or stick their noses into the business of Butch on Saturday, I think was just really ill-advised and something he should have just kept in the pocket, because it makes it seem like he hasn't been paying attention to the show he's been calling week in and week out. Match was fine, as you'd expect. Yeah, you could probably get a triple threat with these three. Or not triple threat, a six-man tag with these three, or these six. And I actually wanted them to make this a pub rules match so that you can kind of make it more cinematic and also play into kind of the characters that all six of, well, five of the six people in this little feud tend to show, right? So I think that would be a nice capper to this little mini feud that's occurring between Gallus and Brawling Brutes plus Tyler Bate.
All right. Let's see. What else have we talked about? I think that's all of the matches.
There was Corbin and Dragunov and Breaker and Hayes, which we kind of talked about.
Talked a little bit about that. So we did see, Baron Corbin approached Ilya Dragunov backstage, essentially said, "Hey, I'm the only one that's beaten you so far." Him and Hayes in the last year, right? So kind of like, hey, I'm looking to come for that NXT title too. So he's got Baron Corbin kind of to worry about in the background as well. The Bron Breakker Carmelo Hayes segment I thought was okay. I kind of like the direction they're going with Bron Breakker because he feels like he's almost a tweener right now. Like, he's still definitely a heel, but I almost feel like he's going to flip and he's going to be that too cool heel, and he's just going to be such a good heel. Everybody's going to start cheering.
Is he
going to
start dancing like Scotty Tuhati and Rikishi?
I mean, that'd be sweet. You know, I did say too cool, so there's that. Although if we see Rikishi and he's not doing something with the bloodline, that's a travesty. just saying. Anything to say on those couple segments, or shall we wrap things up?
Yeah. On the Breakker Hayes thing, right? If you kind of look at how the characters are being presented, they're very similar, but Hayes is trying to get over what he's saying without being an ass, and Breakker is getting over what he's saying because he's an ass, right? So I think he was talking to Hayes about, I'm the only person that knows what you're going through right now because I lost a title on a big stage just like you did, right? And that's true, but he was being smarmy about it, whereas Hayes to Williams was more about a sense of urgency, right? And it wasn't about trying to be an a-hole about it, whereas here, that's what Breaker's trying to be. So I think they have very similar characters here that are just different enough to make it work, especially because of the angles they're involved in. You know, Breaker coming off the thing with Corbin, which I'm still shocked that Baron Corbin got a victory out of PLE and a feud. And I just, yeah. So for Breaker to go back to this, and I think Kelly, what he wrote in his report tonight is accurate, especially with the addition of Cena and Heyman. And honestly, you might see, maybe not Jimmy. I said Jimmy and Solo. You might just have Solo come down because of his connection to NXT and he end up with a tag team match with these four. Not Paul Heyman, of course. But Kelly said, you know, if you weren't sure about them being, you know, high on Breakker and Hayes for the main roster, well, now you know they are definitely high on these two because of what they did to set up their match for next week and who they're pairing them with. You're pairing them with arguably the greatest WWE wrestler of the modern era, which is the last 20 years, in John Cena. You have one of the best managers of all time who is in the thick of one of the best storylines in wrestling history with the Bloodline, also making a presence. So my prediction that Hayes would be here until Stand and Deliver, I said that's where he would drop the title to Williams. Obviously not going to happen in terms of title drop. He might not make it to Stand and Deliver. Both of these two might end up being written off at a certain point and then debuting at the Royal Rumble and from there going to Raw or SmackDown proper. So I think that somehow they've made these two still feel like, I know you weren't a big fan of the segment, but overall, they made these two still feel like integral parts of the show, even though neither are involved in a title situation. So I want to give props there, and I'm really interested to see. The thing with Cena, especially these days, is he has a tendency to try and take the spotlight, overact a little bit too much. I want to see if he can pull that back a bit so that these two can really get the rub from him, from Heyman, possibly Sokoa, possibly Jimmy Uso, and maybe even Roman Reigns. Who knows? Making a comeback to NXT. So really good job between, in terms of the overall effect of making us think about these two as important pieces moving forward for WWE.
All right, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can check out the things I do at natelindberg.com. Hopefully next week we'll have the entire gang here. It's been a while since we've had all three of us on the show. But you can also check Kelly and I out. We're going to be, like I said earlier, filling in for Wade Keller on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show right after SmackDown. Call us, talk to us, let us, you know, talk about that as we approach Fastlane. And speaking of Fastlane, I'm also going to be doing the Fastlane post show on Wrestling Night in America. I'm going to be filling in for Greg Parks doing that. And I think Brandon LeClaire is going to be with me for that. So I'm all over the place, guys. Bruce, where are you?
Find me on B. You could find me at B_Lee253. I will be doing the live report next week for NXT with a stacked show up against Dynamite entitled Tuesday. The big thing to watch out for between now and next Tuesday, how much is WWE going to advertise and publicize next Tuesday's show on SmackDown and on Raw? Keep an eye out for that, everybody.
No, see, that's not the question. The real question is, how many fish can Bobby Fish fry if Bobby Fish could fry fish?
See, I thought you were going to say, when will Dante Chen return? But nonetheless.
No, I'm still.
Well, considering
neither
Bobby
one of
Fish
them
is
are
like 7,000 years old, probably a lot.
And Bobby Fish, Matt Riddle, neither one of them are in the company anymore. But that's where my mind still go, guys. It's where it goes. It's a scary place up there, guys. Hey, we'll see you next week.